14. About Unadwihana there was a time-worn joke that she loved to sing the ancient songs at public events, even at funerals. Asked if she had performed at a recent high burial, Unadwihana answered no, and the riposte was, "Then it was a merciful death indeed."
"Compliments to you, Asenath,"
Unadwihana began, with a ritual rippling feather salute in gray and violet. This achieved the feat of representing the great seal of the vaults in an actual fluttering picture, a striking image on Unadwihana's high fan display. Memor could even see a jittering, vague white patch that stood for the formal writing of ancient times, indecipherable now, but signifying the weight of vast history. It shimmered like a mute reminder of the long purpose of the bowl, and thus of the vault. Asenath introduced Memor, which proved unnecessary, as Unadwihana brushed aside a summary of Memor's life details and turned to address her directly.
"Memor, I will entertain your notions because I knew your great ancestors and feel I owe them some indulgence. Indeed, I live because a certain fine she-folk many generations ago stood and fought against an insurrection that very nearly toppled all order in this vault. That forefolk stands before me now, represented by a minute genetic fraction, in you, Memor."
"I am most grateful," Memor said with a simple mild flourish of ruby embarrassed neck fringe.
"Now I have a surprise of sorts for you, to bring you into our deliberations. Here is your other self."
Unadwihana paused, her voice rising to call,
"Bemor, come forth."
"Bemor," Memor heard, the very name plunging her backwards into her young days, while her eyes fixed on the big, somewhat ungainly senior male that was, she saw, breathing hard, herself. At least, genetically.
"Bemor, lost brother." They had been separated long before Memor went through the revealing.
Now with Bemor, she heard again the joke between the two of them. It had been funny then, while young, but had turned sour many 12 cubed annuals ago.
Be more than Memor.
Be smarter, swifter, know more, exert power, fathom more deeply, stand taller, command power. Be more.
"Brother,"
Memor called, for Be More had not suffered the revealing's agonies and transformations, all done in their youth by high design. Be more, be male.
"I thought this meeting should best come as a surprise, or else one or the other, or even both of you, would surely dodge it."
Unadwihana gave a mirthful display, fluttering ruby breast feathers discreetly. Clearly she was enjoying this.
"Your great turbine of a mind reports you well,"
Bemor said, as overture.
"I've sensed your reports, quite complex and deep."
"Sensed?"
Memor realized her own whole-mind scans, carried out routinely to monitor performance, were not private. Usually they were, but of course not in matters of high security.
"They are also quite entertaining," Bemor said. "You remember well, and your undermind is a source of insight. The facts you confronted alone are high drama. I could scarcely imagine such odd aliens as these late invaders. What zest!"
"You mean, how did I let them escape?"
"No, I mean they have a crafty nature we could use."
Memor was sure your great turbine of a mind was an ironic salute, but best not to draw Unadwihana's attention to it.
"If we can adopt them, perhaps—"
"I think not, too unstable as species go. They can be better used to carry out our larger cruising agenda."
This was new, beyond the time-honored precepts of the astronomers, and indeed of all other castes. Larger cruising agenda? Memor should be shocked, she knew, but had no time for that now.
"I acted to constrain their actions, under Asenath's direction."
Bemor waved this aside with a cluster flourish in green and sea-blue.
"Those orders now vanish. There is new wisdom falling upon us from the stars."
Memor contented herself with a fan-feather gesture and let Asenath carry the conversation. She was still staggering mentally from the sudden meeting of her near self. The path not taken, if somehow she could have stayed a male. Bemor had a quick, brusque way of saying things that swept away the niceties of diplomacy and polite evasion. Quite male. Best to change direction.
I was discussing how I was forced to carry forward the reconnaissance of the Sill, who had sheltered the primates. They proved better at bringing down our skyfish with their simple chemical cannon, admittedly. I
fled as you should. Beemore spoke kindly, shuffling his large feet in a faint echo-dance of welcome.
To soften what was to come?
The primate ingenuity combined non-linearly with that of the Sill, who were always an irksome and crafty kind.
Destabilizing, Asenoth added, still. But then she backed away, as if to let the twins negotiate their own newfound equilibrium. So did Unajwihana, with a muted bow.
Memor saw this meeting was arranged to divulge information, in a way slanted to make best use of the perpetual jockeying for position in the astronomer hierarchy, and of course, in the status of the vaulted, who tended the most ancient records, integrating them with the emerging new.
So take the momentum away from them.
What new wisdom intrudes?
Memor chose to use an ancient saying, said to come from the builders, though across the sum of bowl eras no one truly knew.
We fathom more of the gravitational waves and their true origin, Beemore said.
As I recall, they come from glory, or from some source well beyond, Memor said,
for this had been the received wisdom from before she was born.
Not so, Beemore said, not beyond. The source is in the immediate glory in the system.
There is no plausibility, as some argued, that the gravitational waves came from a chance coincidence in the sky, from some cosmological source far away.
Not even close. I see your early education has been a waste of time.
Memor knew this jibe, a lancing shot at her earlier ranking in the rigorous status quo of the elect, pre-astronomer examinations. Quadlineal calculus had always eluded her somehow, and Beemore had never let her forget it. She now had to get back some position in this conversation playing out before their elders.
But surely there cannot be heavy masses moving near a planetary system that would render unstable the orbits of any planet nearby.
No, that must now be considered untrue. Facts say otherwise. We have heard from our web-trading partners.
What can they?
Beemore beamed, yet kept to his clear factual mask.
You may recall some long annuals ago we asked them to erect gravitational wave antennas to concentrate upon glory. They have so done, and with felicitous trading strategies we have secured their data.
Very well, play for time. And think. I did not know that. Expensive, I suppose?
Beemore was enough similar that Memor could easily read the quick, darting expressions in feather flutter, quill rattle, spines flexing so hues slid from steel blue to indigo sheen, that bespoke anticipation of an opportunity to make a veiled boast. Asenoth raised some pink neck rustle as a deft, ironic signal.
Memor realized this was what some intimates of the court termed status opera, the only true game when the social structure must remain static, for the sake of bowl stability. Maneuver for position, yes, but carefully, deftly, for the system must always endure above all.
Beemore was in his element, and so took his fulsome time.
I engaged three other galactic web partners, one of whom knew nothing of gravitational waves whatever and how to detect them. As expected, those who did not know had technologies smaller and less sensitive than ours.
Beemore delivered this in a flat, factual way, almost offhand, and with a subtle wing shrug, a good precursor to a revelation. Memor appreciated the method, as it was hers as well. They were twins, after all. Though Beemore seemed to do it with more verve, as if knowing their audience would approve verve.
I had to trade valuable arts and science to induce their cooperation, Beemore said. We barter and gain, delayed for many annuals, of course. I employed a rich trading language to describe our wants, and used the artificial intelligent agents we had installed in those societies long in the past.
Memor was at a disadvantage here, since she had learned little of such distant diplomacies. She did know that the ancients had seen value in establishing agents, transferred as sealed minds in code to distant worlds. Interstellar commerce over huge distances made sense only if exchange of knowledge— arts, science, engineering, the equivalent of patents, could be traded for some return value. Such a market occurred, mediated among artificial intelligences, runs solely inside mutually agreed upon containment. The mind province established among alien societies. Elaborate protocols ensured that no artificial intelligences could run outside the mind province. They were safe there, too, to run their code without corruption. This protected Bol's secrets from the alien locals, and in turn, the local infosphere from the agent.
"I chose truly distant worlds for two reasons," Beemore said. "They had to be displaced from our trajectory so that we could gain triangulation on Glory. I then—"
"You transmitted double encrypted?"
Osanoth demanded.
"You are sure the gravitational wave signatures were unwrapped in secrecy by our sequestered agent?"
"I received the coded instant return notice, yes. I got it back many annuals before the official trading partner even acknowledged receipt."
"Meaning? That they pondered it long before even notifying us?"
Beemore was not disturbed by these thrusts. He seemed bemused.
"Caution is admirable, do you not think so? The first reply came from an insectoid civilization, apparently hungry for further astronomical knowledge. They trade such wares eagerly and built the needed detectors with speed."
"How distant are they?"
"Over 12 squared light annuals, at a high angle with respect to our trajectory. The second reply came from a similar distance and a different large angle. We paid them with techno-lore, methods our prior history implied would interest them. These were duly lodged in the host species' banking system. Credits not spent locally may be transmitted, securely encrypted, between solar systems, of course. Then came a third reply, also willing."
Beemore made to condense around them a shimmering shell display of the realm around the bowl. The three agreeable trader stars shone bright yellow, all at considerable angles away. One lay very nearly parallel to the bowl, along the trajectory axis they followed, ending in Glory. The simulation showed message flags denoting ongoing info-commerce transporting among all three, as well as their links to the bowl.
"So they set to work, these trade partners.
Ran their gravitational wave detectors, learned our skills, and nailed firm the site of the waves. It is in our destination system. Glory."
Memor said slowly,
"Agents do amass more and more knowledge about their host species. They report back. Do these worlds have any opinion about the cause of the waves?"
Beemore looked pleased, with a body flutter of magenta flesh. To Memor this was a giveaway, a salute, really, as if to say, "I recognize. You can leap ahead to see what's coming."
"They could not resist diagnosing the long wavelengths and their resonances, and
there are messages within."
Osanoth gasped and could not resist.
"Saying what?"
Beemore's elation collapsed, his neck wattles compressing to thin red layers.
"We do not know. These two are apparently deeply encrypted."
Memor felt a tremor of awe, that emotion mingling fear and wonder so seldom sensed in a calm, regular life. It swept her like a tidal slap.
"Sending coded messages by oscillating huge masses to make waves of gravity itself? In organized ways? That is—"
she was about to say impossible, but caution ruled.
"Improbable, in the extreme."
Osanoth added wryly,
"We are approaching something strange and perhaps quite dangerous. Glory seems innocuous, but they send gravitational messages somehow. The escaped primates are headed that way, too, or were until they decided to land upon the bowl of heaven. They seem—"
she preened with an oddly insulting fan gesture, ominous and foreboding.
"Ambitious."
Memor decided not to rise to the bait.
"They are able, and may be of use."
Unajwihana came in then with a gentle, sad wing shrug.
"I enjoy your sparring, but there are larger issues, you twins."
A nod to Osanoth to proceed.
"Our larger cruising agenda, recall?"
Osanoth said,
"The Glorians, as we term them, have sent an electromagnetic signal."
"Directed at us?" Unajwihana prompted.
"I suppose."
Osanoth looked puzzled.
"There is no distinction in spatial coordinates between the bowl and the primate star rammer," Beemore said. "Let me explain the content."
"Which is?"
Memor asked, impatient with this parrying.
Cartoons, Unajwihana said, such as primitive cultures employ. They might as well be painted on cave walls but for the fact that they move, showing violence often physically improbable.
Silence.
I would truly like to know some way to discover if these abject signals are insulting from a culture that has devolved so deeply that it thinks these are useful or even amusing.
Bimor said, beings who can hurl huge masses to make messages would not be so. All our knowledge of cultural evolution gathered in your archives, Unajwihana says so.
I would so believe,
Unajwihana said simply.
Or else,
Memor hesitated,
we are mistaken in our assumptions.
Whatever can you mean?
Asenath said, with a nasty rebuke rustle.
Suppose they are not sent to intersect us, or the Star Rammer.
Memor envisioned the line of sight. Glory, the bowl, and upon it the alien ship orbiting above, and beyond, at an unknown distance farther from Glory.
The Glorians may be transmitting to hail and instruct, and so to warn, the primate homeworld.
But then,
Bimor hesitated. Fevered rattles came from his wing, a note of harried distress at what he glimpsed.
Imagination helps, Bimor realized.
The insight had come from her undermind, direct and unsaid until now. She felt a rumble of discontent from deep within her, of knowledge pent up, unexpressed and so vagrant and wild. Fear surged in her, but she suppressed it, focused on the moment. She had been in a duel with Bimor here, and now there was a sally she could use at last, an advantage coming from within. Uninspected, yet sure, she felt sure. Memor said, not without some pleasure,
they are afraid not of us, but of the humans.